T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
I still consider that the Timmy Anderson or Moncada possibility at the top of the order, one or the other, and you know, vice versa positions. But I want to see them, and I want to be able to actually see beyond that some of the youngsters that we have in camp.
You're listening to the Joe O Show on 670 The Score.
White Sox skipper Rick Renteria there. I can't say that I agree with that one. I'm all aboard with David Ross making the decision that Chris Bryant would be the leadoff man for the Cubs. That makes much more sense to me than Rick Renteria going with Tim Anderson there. Now, I'm somebody that hated Tim Anderson in the 7-hole last year, and there were some that said, "Hey, it's working, don't mess with it. Why would you move him up?" I move him up because he's the batting champion. That's why. The amount of plate appearances that you lose going from 1 to 2 is typically 13 to 14 plate appearances over the course of an entire season. What do you think the difference is over the first few spots all the way down to 7? Makes absolutely no sense to me. Bothered me. Now you're thinking, Joe, wait, you just said that you hated him in 7, but you also don't like him in the leadoff spot. These are very, very different situations. Last year, Tim Anderson should have been near the top. I didn't say at the top, but near the top of the lineup for all those extra plate appearances. But now it's a much deeper lineup. You have so many more options, and probably the leadoff man of the future for your White Sox, not on the roster yet, maybe. Maybe in the minors. We'll get to that coming up. I want to hear more from Rick Renteria. Here's Renteria talking about the importance of on-base percentage for your leadoff hitter.
If you're getting on base, whether by walk or by hit, is a pretty high rate. It's probably kind of a wash for me. The difference would be simply that maybe some individuals take a pitcher deeper into account in a particular at-bat. But even those guys that are high average guys that may not quote-unquote typically fit your on-base percentage profile, they end up probably fouling off a lot of pitches as well. So you end up still driving up pitch counts. And I think that, you know, depending on who we're facing, obviously would give me a little bit of something to think about. Because if you're, if Timmy's leading off, let's say, for example, now you got a single and you got a guy holding him on, and now you got Moncada behind him hitting left-handed, you got a hold of the right side. There are a number of things. You know, Timmy can still shoot the right side as well. So just depending on things like that, I mean, you can do any number of things.
Here's what concerns me if you're going to have Tim Anderson in the leadoff spot. Now, he's your AL batting champ last year, hitting .335. I think you have to be open to some regression there as a Sox fan. You expect that to happen. You're going to repeat .335? It would be great. Chances are that's not going to happen this upcoming year. Batting average of balls in play, it's .400. League average, usually around .300. Sean, what's going to happen after a year in which your BABIP is .400 usually?
Well, it's going to go down, but it depends on the type of hitter, because yeah, we've seen before that guys, especially like Yoan Moncada, these guys just hit the ball hard.
And that's were they shifting on him a lot?
No, because
just trying to think back, yeah,
because he's a guy that can spray. Typically, when he's on the left-handed side of the plate, he is more of a pull hitter. Yeah. But still, then again, I mean, he is able to hit to all fields. So He's also hitting it over the infield, so the shift typically doesn't matter. And then obviously you're talking about, you know, if you have that extreme shift to
but
the
also,
right side.
But 400 is pretty extreme as well.
Yeah, but I mean, we've seen before, I mean, Avi's great year in 2016. Avi was a guy that always killed the ball, and he had an inflated BABIP. It's just that's the
but
type
are you
of
gonna,
hitter he is.
But I'm just saying doing that over the course of multiple seasons is highly unlikely.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. And, okay, so he had 15 walks last year, and this is where the problem is. You want him to get on base for the heart of the order coming up, and, yeah, you got a guy hitting 335. Okay, great. Put him near the top of the lineup, but you're only drawing 15 walks. That's a walk rate of 2.9%. That is, among qualified hitters last year, that is 134th. 134th highest walk rate among qualified hitters. The only player to wear a Sox uniform that had a lower walk rate last year was Danny Mendick. So,
well, and yeah. At least going back to, because I was talking more about Moncada, at least with Anderson still hit the ball hard, but if we were looking at least at just strictly soft percentage by Fangraphs, 12.2% of Moncada's balls were hit soft, mm-hmm. Anderson 17.9%. So there is a drastic difference there at how hard they're actually hitting the ball. And Anderson's, you know, BABIP is obviously going to be inflated by his speed, Moncada's as well. But, Anderson also can spray to all fields, but he's not going to be bringing that sustained power hitting gaps. And also, another thing as well, Moncada was third in the team when it comes to pitches per scene per plate appearance.
Great.
At 3.97.
Yeah.
So he's typically getting later into at-bats. He's seeing what these guys are hitting. So he's able to time up these fastballs, these off-speed pitches, and he's able to solidly drive balls out to left and right field where Anderson's seeing the first pitch he likes and swinging at it. That is where I'm worried about Tim Anderson. That's why I want to see him get less plate appearances.
Would he adjust if he's not hitting sixth or seventh like he did so much last year? If manager takes him aside and says, Tim, we want to put you here, but you have different responsibilities. You're going to have to use a bit of a different approach with your ABs if you're going to be our leadoff guy, and we want to get you those extra plate appearances. His career would suggest he won't.
Well,
he'll be TA, you know?
The one thing that at least is good in his, you said 15 walks he drew, right?
Yes.
He had 277 plate at-bats, or 291 plate appearances batting second last year.
Batting second.
Yeah, batting second. His second most was batting seventh with 119. So at least his walk rate with batting second is much higher. He had through 13 walks batting second compared to two batting seventh. And that's where both of his walks came, were batting second and seventh. So I think you did see a little bit of an adjustment.
Maybe he did.
At least batting second, that he was taking a little bit more pitches, but still 13 walks and 291 plate appearances isn't good.
But I do think it's fair to assume, like, this will be a conversation piece early on in the year. Look at your best hitters. And Renteria kind of gets it, I think, because this is conventional wisdom. This is going on everywhere. Okay, best hitters, where are you? Moncada and Tim Anderson? Okay, go to the top of the lineup. Those were your top two guys in WAR. Moncada 4.6, Tim Anderson 4.0 last season. And James McCann, not too far. He's right there, but he's mad, and he should be probably mad. He was at 3.8 last year.
Well, and McCann last year as well, he was the guy who, at least with over 400 plate appearances, he drew the most pitches per scene per at-bat.
Yeah.
So he was a guy that was consistently taking guys deep into counts, and that's also where Yasmani Grandal comes into play. He's a guy that walks a lot. He's a guy that sees a lot of pitches throughout this entire season. That's why there's talk about him possibly being a leadoff guy.
But the reason we're going to talk about this earlier is, well, one, in Glendale, Arizona, Rick Renteria is talking about it, something he's considering, but the guys that will probably be your long-term leadoff guy, one guy is going to be just seeing a major league pitch for the first time. We know how Renteria is with the youth. He wants to just ease him into it and slowly bring him up higher and higher in the lineup. Luis Robert. I mean, and, you know, they don't all translate, but if you look at his minor league numbers last year, played at three different levels. He had 328 at an on base of 376. And the other guy, Nick Madrigal, he'll be up at some point this season, we assume. That means things are going well for him. He hit three levels last year, hit 311. On base, 377. Robert was 376. Madrigal, 377. You would expect for the long term, those guys, once they're ready for it, that they're going to be your leadoff hitters on the south side. That's what I think most people are expecting. And as far as Moncada, I don't have an issue with it. How can I? If you believe he's going to take even another step, as great as he was, and you can say great, even though he's not getting the national acclaim and his performance went under the radar because he's on a very bad team, all the questions that we had going into 2019 on Moncada and all the strikeouts, and just how it all changed this past season, it was a remarkable year for him. The problem is the team just didn't win many games, so he didn't get some of the national coverage, even local coverage that he absolutely deserved. I mean, last year he was the best player on the team, and it wasn't even close. I mean, I wouldn't put it close. I guess you could say Tim Anderson, but I don't know. I thought Moncada was clearly better, and maybe part of that was moving from second base to third base. But if he takes another step, if he truly does, if he improves this year, he should be in the legitimate shortlist of AL MVP contenders. That's how good he was last year in his second year on the south side. So what's it going to be at the very end? So where would I go? I would not have an issue if they want to throw Moncada up there at the start of the year. Grandal is not a bad option either. And I wonder if Renteria has an appetite for putting a guy that's not going to be out there every single game. I mean, you can move guys around. That's how a lot of managers handle it right now. But I would not have any sort of an issue with Moncada there. You could say, well, he's more of a run producer. Maybe you want to move him down a little bit. But I'm not going to fight you on saying that he's going to get more plate appearances, because that's a good thing for this White Sox offense.
I mean, the thing, though, that I think at least helps Moncada the most is, although he does have a ton of power, and we talked about his BABIP being inflated, he only hit 25 bombs last year,
yeah,
right? But he was still, you know, 34 doubles, five triples. He is a guy that hits extra base hits consistently.
Yes.
So I think that is the biggest thing that is at least helping him, is he isn't a guy that is going to smash 35 home runs, and he might at some point in his career, but Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Abreu, those guys are supposed to be the guys that are supposed to be hitting for massive power, driving in those guys that are getting on base.
Yeah.
Those are your run producers.
And it kind of makes sense how Renteria got here. And I agree with me or not on Tim Anderson. He's talking about the 1-2 spots, but I think the locked in spots for most days have to be 3-4, Abreu and Encarnacion, right, Sean? You agree with that?
Yeah, I know people dislike the idea of having Jose, at least Sox fans, dislike the idea of having Jose Abreu batting third.
Oh, he will be.
Well, that's the thing, is whether you like it or not,
yeah,
he is a guy that signed here because of his history with the White Sox, because of his history with Jerry Reinsdorf, and he is now seen as the leader in that clubhouse. And the last thing they're going to do, especially in the first year of this rebuild, is move him down in the lineup after he just drove in the most runs in the AL and won the, what's that award? I'm blanking. He hit the most RBIs in the AL last year.
Yeah.
There's no way they're moving him out of that position.
Isn't that surprising after watching last year?
No, because the White Sox were actually good offensively. You were throwing out Dylan Covey every five starts.
But I'm saying, you look at some of these powerhouses throughout the American League, like with the Yankees and the Astros. Maybe we'll see if they are this year. But it was a bit of a surprise. And they don't even have all the talent there. And that there were so many guys on base, enough guys on base for Abreu to lead the league in RBI. I thought that was pretty amazing. Not something that I was expecting. The big question... Okay, your leadoff man, and then who's playing second base until Nick Madrigal rolls into town, until he gets promoted and he's ready for that every single day? Who's going to be playing in that position? And also, Mazzara platoon, you would assume so. You would think, just looking at the last few years and what he's done, that he's a big splits guy. So is there, you good with Lurie getting a good amount of time, or you're bringing in somebody else?
Well,
Yasiel Puig.
Leori might
Yasiel Puig.
But Puig is a guy that doesn't have those plus righty-lefty platoon splits.
Yeah, but I'll take him.
I mean, I'm not going to say no to Yasiel Puig. I mean, he's a better bench bat than Nicky Delmonico. I'm not going to, go out for bat for Shane's guy, Nicky Delmonico, here. But I would love to see Puig on the south side. I would love to see him in black and white. But I think that at least with Mazzara, I think they're going to look in-house for that. I think a move by now would have been made to find a platoon hitter for Mazzara at this point. I think they're going to be looking in spring training in Mesa right now.
Where's Grandal going to hit?
Yeah, you said fourth for Encarnacion. I think he's going to bat five.
You think Grandal's in four? Okay, yeah. So you're not down on Grandal leading off.
I'm not against it because he's a guy that would have led the White Sox too, and you know, pitches per scene at bat 4.32. That's higher, you know, 0.2 points higher than McCann. I wouldn't be against it. The issue there is the speed of Grandal and the lack of speed. He's going to get on base, but if Moncada's hitting, you know, bullets out into the right center gap when he's batting lefty, where's Grandal going to end up? Is he going to even be able to make it to third, or is he going to be gunned out at that point? So I don't know how well he would be able to actually get runs across the plate due to his lack of speed.
No, I think you're right, actually, with Grandal at four. The more I think about it, because I think a lot of managers, not that they didn't do this before, but they're going to go out of their way even more to make sure that their lineup is looking righty-lefty, righty-lefty, or the ability with some switch hitters to do that because of the new rule with relievers. You're going to have to face at least three batters. So that would make a lot of sense. And Encarnacion, yeah, I could see him at five, and I don't think anybody would have an issue with
that. Well, and that's the thing, too. If you're going to have Moncada bat first and Anderson bat second, Moncada has that speed to lack the deficiency that Anderson has in his bat, at least power-wise, because comparing him to Edwin Encarnacion, Tim Anderson isn't hitting 40 bombs.
Man, this is a deep lineup.
So at least with Anderson, you're going to get the speed of Moncada on base. He's going to at least be able to get it, you know, deep into the outfield. Moncada can go first from third with his speed. If you're batting Grandal fourth, and let's say they go, you know, down in order, 1, 2, 3, Grandal basically is then your leadoff hitter for that second inning. And Encarnacion, with his massive power, he'll be able to drive him in, boom, two-run home run. So, I mean, that's at least the benefit I see of going Abreu, Grandal, and Encarnacion 3, 4, 5.
There's so much length to this lineup, and I'll be the first one to say, boy, these expectations of possibly winning an American League Central crown this year, when so many young guys, so much youth here, you don't even know what you have in Kopech yet. Keuchel, a brand new addition, and Giolito, okay, he did it for 1 year, he was an ace, but what's he going to do? Same thing with Cease and Lopez. When you look just at the lineup and what the rotation can be, it's all right there. In most seasons, there would be more pressure on Rick Renteria to have Eloy Jimenez and Robert much higher in the lineup. But if he slots them in 6-7, are you going to yell and scream about that? Because which players are coming down in the lineup to go to 6 or 7 if you're all upset that Robert isn't higher in the order? Which guys?
Well, I think that's where Anderson then goes down to 6 or 7.
He'll probably end up there.
Yeah, and I think that...
You had success last year there. Let's go back. Yeah.
I think he'll probably bat 7. 6 is going to be up in the air. Depends on, you know, if Mazzara's out there. DH could then play into factor, you know, if it's going to be a McCann day, if it's going to be a Grandal day. You know, if Edwin Encarnacion's not going to be playing.
Aloy's hitting 6, man.
Oh, right. That was one name we haven't talked about this entire segment. Was Aloy.
I know.
Forgot about him for a second.
Remember Aloy Day? And just the focus, that Yankee series, that was the first time he hit a home run, right?
Yeah.
I believe it was in the Bronx. It's just, and now he slots in as a 6. And there was a Dylan Cease game against the Tigers. Yeah, he's our 4 or 5. Just the amount of talent that they've added.
And I wouldn't be shocked, too, if Eloy ends up just jumping Encarnacion at some point. Because Encarnacion last year wasn't the typical Edwin Encarnacion. He still hit 30 bombs.
But I don't think Encarnacion was needed. It was a great addition, but he wasn't needed.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain.
No, you shouldn't.
Cherry on top of a great offseason.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure there will be some struggles, because that's completely normal. Guys like Eloy and Luis Robert, and when Madrigal ends up coming up. But there's a lot of reasons to be excited. And speaking of that, think about the excitement level that you have right now sitting here in February, and they're going to start to play some spring games as we get closer and closer to opening day. And also think about where you were 1 year ago today as a Sox fan. Because 1 year ago today, it became official Manny Machado, 10 years, $300 million for the San Diego Padres, and every Sox fan I knew completely down in the dumps. And just think of where you are 1 year later. I want to talk about that a little bit on the other side. We have open phone lines, 312-644-6767. Text messages in the text zone at 67011, which is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Joe Ostrowski with you on a Friday night. Sports Radio 670, The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to The Joe O Show on 670 The Score.
This has to be a joke. 630 texter, it just seems like all the hosts do nothing but white sucks talk. I thought maybe the Cubs went somewhere else.
This is the Cubs flagship station, correct?
White sucks. Usually it's all you guys do is talk Cubs, Cubs, right. Cubs. White sucks. That was a good one, man. Haven't heard white sucks before. That's how you know you're doing it right. That's how you know. When you get complaints on both sides. Good. I'm glad you're angry, 630. White sucks. He probably tweets that, puts that out there on Facebook when they lose. Oh, it's a great day because the white sucks lost. Concern about the white sucks?
That'll show them.
Do you see what I did? I took the O out and I put a U. Because it almost spells sucks. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena this season as they host Illinois, Penn State, and Minnesota at Welsh Ryan Arena. Yeah, we said that. Tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. Joe Ostrowski with you. All you guys do is talk. I love that complaint. You talk too much. Well, it's an audio medium, and it's a sports talk radio station. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit because if we went to commercial, you'd be mad about that one too. I love it. Absolutely love it. Open phone lines 312-644-6767. If you're looking for Cubs conversation, be right here at 8 o'clock. Our guy, Evan Altman, Cubs Insider, will join me. Interested in his column on Hulu. Yeah, Cubs had this big announcement about Hulu. I don't think you're going to get them on Hulu if you made the switch this weekend, so we'll be getting into that as well. Manny Machado officially became a Padre for 10 years. We'll see if that he stays there for 10 years, but he signed that 10-year deal 1 year ago. Came official. Remember last winter, all the promises made by the front office at Sox Fest, going through the media again and again. Rakan didn't handle his business that way this year. Quite the opposite. Stealth-like. Didn't say a word. Didn't make any promises. But at Sox Fest, it was quite a different offseason because a lot of the work was already done. But just think of where you were that morning when Manny Machado was having his press conference around here at the station. No joke. White Sox fans were so depressed because felt like they were lied to. You were making all these promises and you were saying you were going to spend the money and you didn't spend the money. Okay, you had the highest offer, but only if you hit this escalator and that one. But where's the 10 for 300? When it came time for that, the White Sox didn't want to meet that number. And I don't agree with this, but some Sox fans would tell you right now, best thing they ever did was not sign Manny Machado. But just think of how optimistic you are for this upcoming season compared to where you were 1 year ago after swinging and missing on, I guess they were going after Harper, but they knew they weren't going to get him, and also Manny Machado. And this year, you get Grandal, and you lock up Luis Robert, and we're going to see Kopech soon. They were able to land one of the better starting pitchers out there in crooked Dallas Keuchel. You learned last season that Lucas Giolito is a legit number one starter. A year ago, you weren't sure what he was going to be. Moncada was off the charts last season. Now he can be a cornerstone to this rebuild. A guy you win because of. Tim Anderson was the batting champ. Look at all the things that have happened in the past year. And 1 year ago, you were completely down in the dumps, thinking maybe the rebuild wouldn't work. All the injuries they were going through. Couldn't sign any of the big name guys. And look at how they've gone to work. Now's the important thing. Now's the winning games part. That rotation, is it as good as it seems? Are your outfielders going to hit like you expect them to? And I'm not just talking about it at the plate. I'm just talking about hitting their potential. Are they going to be able to work out a bullpen? They kept the closer last trade deadline because they thought they were going to contend. And I think they have most of you convinced that they're going to contend this year. And I'm not going to argue them on that one. Look at the rest of this division. I think most of us believe that Lindor is going to be dealt at some time. Maybe it's going to be near the trade deadline, but it's probably going to happen. I expect this to be a two-team race for the top of the AL Central. And the Twins, after a great year last year, on paper, they got even better. But the White Sox got a lot better too. So I can't wait to see how this plays out. But I just think it's funny on the anniversary of Manny Machado signing with the Padres and how upset all of White Sox Nation was, and the patience was completely wearing thin at how that compared to how they feel today when you juxtapose things. I mean, Sean, you're one of the bigger Sox fans at the station here.
Appreciated.
Were you down on Han, down on the rebuild, down on everything going on after the major disappointment of going 0-for-2 with the big free agents a year ago?
Absolutely, and I was just talking to Joe from Joliet, who was also upset that you didn't say that Tim Anderson was led the MLB in batting average. You kept saying he led the
batting champ.
Yeah, but you said AL. He led the entire league.
Oh my God.
Hey, Joe's a passionate White Sox fan. But no, I was telling him I was frustrated on that day because it just felt like another time where they didn't give enough, and it felt like they were just being too tentative to fully make that push. And obviously now they were less tentative this offseason. It was great to see, and it really rekindled my fandom this year.
Was it Keuchel or Grandal?
It was Keuchel. I was working here. We were doing a Bulls game, yeah. And Dickens was doing the DePaul game in Russ's studio, and I printed out like 8 copies of Jeff Passan's tweet about Dallas Keuchel becoming a White Sox, and I just passed it around.
It was a Saturday night, right?
Yeah, it was. And I think Rick Camp was sitting in that chair. I came in while he was doing filling in for Schuster.
And he was doing the Bulls pre and post?
Yeah, and I went in and I handed him the copy. He's like, what's this? And I was like, Dallas Keuchel's a White Sox. Let's celebrate.
Oh, wow.
Last year I was frustrated because it just felt like another time where they were $25 million off. They were $25 million off from getting a legitimate superstar on this team.
Wasn't it 50?
I thought it was 275.
But the guaranteed money, though.
Even then.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big gap.
25. Let's even just give him credit. They even gave 275.
And then Wheeler happened.
Yeah, Wheeler was difficult, but I didn't even want Wheeler.
Yeah.
So that one I was able to swallow a little bit.
But it felt like more of the same.
But we got Grandal first, so that was a little bit better. Okay, we had the move first. Our biggest move happened right away. That felt good that we went out, gave the biggest free agent contract of 4 years, $82 million to Grandal. The Wheeler was a little bit of a sting, but at least the Machado one, just being $25 million off from actually getting him was the most frustrating thing because mm-hmm. you could afford it. And right now they're still the 18th team in the major league when it comes to payroll.
I was doing updates that Monday, the morning after the Machado news broke, and I lost it because I was laughing so hard. I wasn't laughing at the White Sox, but Mully, who is as positive as they come about the White Sox for the most part, just one of the biggest Sox fans here at the station, he was so angry, and he doesn't get that angry a lot. He was so mad. He was going off about the shell game the Sox were running. It was hilarious. 5 a.m. and I'm in there cracking up. But and here they are. Even if they don't hit that win total, I think it's now 83.5. If you're a 500 team, that is a huge step with the amount of control that they have over this entire roster. And I expect some regression with Tim Anderson and Makata. It is possible. Same with Giolito. But you have so many guys that you expect to add to this, whether it's the lineup or the rotation or even the bullpen. It's just so different because so many people thought, and for good reason, that this is just more Sox being the Sox. And they showed you this past offseason, they're not playing around anymore. They're not. Found this funny, and I know Mac and Shep were taking shots at White Sox Nation. So Fox Sports has been running this best fan base bracket thing on social media. Really kind of odd. I guess it's like a Final Four thing. People do that in March. I guess they did it in February for the best fan base. And the White Sox got to the finals against the Braves fan base. Wait a second. How are the White Sox and the Braves the two best fan bases? Because of votes? Braves? The Braves. Those games are notorious for empty seats, even when they were winning. When they had the best rotation of all time, they couldn't fill that stadium. And what do people always rip the White Sox fans about? Not showing up at games.
Hey, but we show up on Twitter.
Well, you know, well, here's what's funny about that. They were actually laughing about this. And if Cubs fans, they lost to, what did they lose to? They got a bye for the first round, and they lost in their first match.
What they lost to the Indians.
That's ridiculous. Indians? They don't even show. They don't show up at games.
The owner's selling off players because he can't afford it.
Right.
Oh, wait. The Cubs are doing that, too. Oops.
That's a lie. They can't afford it. They choose not to.
All right. Sorry.
They're choosing not to spend the money.
Don't want to misrepresent them on here on the score.
I will back you guys, Sean, you Sox fans here, because they are passionate. They are very passionate. And they kind of send messages when they're not showing up. Kind of like Bulls fans right now. Sending a message to ownership, and it looks like it's actually going to work. Even in 2020, you can be heard when we think it's all about the bottom line and, well, it's all about TV contracts. No. It seems like it's working over at the United Center with the Bulls, and I think it's worked in the past with the White Sox. Herb Lawrence and Chris Tannehill, fairly new, they just started a Locked On Sox podcast. And already, the amount of listens and subscribers that they have is going through the roof. I was talking with Ryan McGuffey not too long ago over at NBC Sports Chicago, and he does a Sox Talk podcast. Chuck Garfine, Vinny Duber on there. Like, that's their most successful podcast, and it isn't even close. Sox fans are always looking for content about their team. They are a passionate fan base, and just because they don't show up every day does not mean that they don't care about their team. They follow the coverage. A lot of times when there's, let's say there's something bad going on involving the Pale Hose, these lines are full. If we're talking about the White Sox, about how angry they are after a loss. I sat here many times in this chair after Matt Thornton would blow a save when we were carrying the White Sox, people screaming about Thornton again and again.
You brought up something, and I want to push you on it just a little bit, because I'm just more curious, because in 2013 I was, what, in high school? So I wasn't really too in-depth into sports media. I don't really remember the Rick Hahn transition. And it feels, at least from the outside looking in, and obviously I wasn't too hip to front office moves and all that stuff back in the day, Do you think that the Rick Hahn move is just the natural progression of him finally taking over, or do you think it had to deal with fan pushback?
When they went young, when they traded Sale? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So, like, do you think that it was actually put down from Jerry being like, okay, we need to actually start kicking this rebuild up in general, or do you think Rick Hahn finally gained trust within that organization, and that's what he said needed to be done? So how much do you think the fan pushback actually led to this White Sox turnaround?
I don't think fan pushback was number one. Well, first off, once they made the transition, now Rick Hahn had the title, but the amount of Chicago sports fans that believed that Rick Hahn actually had the power to make moves was very small. Everybody assumed that Ken Williams was just kicked upstairs, the title changed, but he's making all the calls. And that was the case. If you just follow what was happening at the trade deadline and how aggressive we know Ken Williams' style has been throughout his entire career, and what they were doing is, yeah, like, you make a move for Jake Peavy, that's a Ken Williams move. And a lot of times when they would make moves, Ken Williams was there to take credit for many, many years because he'd be looking for that microphone. And that always rubbed a lot of Sox fans the wrong way. I think many believed in Hahn if they would just relinquish some of the power and let him do what he wanted to do. Rick Hahn kind of took a victory lap a couple years ago when they made the move to have this full-on rebuild. And he's like, you know, so many people in this town said the White Sox will never have a rebuild, that Jerry Reinsdorf doesn't want to do that. Well, see, we're doing this. It took a long time for you to convince Jerry that this was the right thing to do. I actually think the biggest reason, Sean, that they pushed that button and traded Sale, traded Quintana, went through with this, and we still don't know if it's going to work. But the reason that they went through with it is they saw what the Cubs did. That's the biggest reason. That they'll never admit it. They just won't. But that's it.
And as a Sox
Astros
fan,
too. Astros too.
And as a Sox fan, really care. If that's the reason, whatever the reason is to actually make a push and start cleaning it house and start, you know, pushing towards the future, I'm all for it. So if it was the Cubs 2016 World Series win that made it happen, I'm fine with that. I'm happy for all my Cub, you know, friends that finally got a World Series after 108 years. Like, congrats to them. But hopefully this actually makes a push to then just make Chicago sports more competitive, because this town is better when the White Sox and Cubs are both competitive.
Right.
And I think that's probably the biggest frustration that I think we all have at this station, is the fact that now we see the White Sox pushing and it feels like the Cubs window is closing prematurely.
It's already shut.
you said
for me,
it
is.
But then I think also Cubs fans still have that feeling that Theo will be able to right the ship in some way.
Yeah, I don't know why. Okay, I do know why, but it's been a while since some of his moves have worked. Let's put it that way.
He's a good talker, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he's one of the best sports talkers.
As upset
talkers.
You are about the team, when he grabs a microphone for an hour, you just walk away feeling better. Even though nothing changed. Like, he told you about all the stuff that was going to happen at the end of the year. Nothing's happened, and people still have faith. Like, he told you, the offense is broken. The lineup is broken. This has to change. We cannot roll this back. And they've rolled it back for two consecutive years now. Okay, he'll figure it out.
Aren't they also just technically kind of rolling it out again?
Yes, that's exactly what they're doing.
I mean, they're just giving you they're putting Chris Bryant number one.
And he said the same thing at the end of 20, was it? So that would be the end of 2018. He said the same thing about changes. But anyways. But yeah, no, I think it's going to be a great thing, and I hope one of the two teams wins 90 games. That would be great to see. I think they're both going to probably be in the 80s, but that's good too, because we don't have a bad team in town.
If the White Sox were at 78 wins, I would still be happy, because it is close enough that I think there is enough differential that
I think
you
need
could be
to
at
see
82.
What it looks like.
True.
What if? Yeah,
I think if
you'd rather see it from. Obviously, you'd rather see it from Kopech and Cease and guys like that instead of Gio Gonzalez and Keuchel carrying the rotation.
I wouldn't mind the Keuchel
thing
just because he's on a 4-year deal, so we're still going to have to deal with him for a couple of years. So I wouldn't mind that. I think also Kopech, if he doesn't have a great season this year, I don't know if I'm going to be too worried just because he's going to be working back from injury.
They don't
the
even
Cease
need
one would be the most worrying, because he wasn't even that spectacular last year.
True. They don't even need Rodon to come back. That's how it feels. Because of the depth they've provided.
I think best case scenario, I think Sox fans would hope that he would then be a bullpen piece. Because he does have, you know, that great ability from the left side to go three innings, or, you know, to go long distances, and he can face three straight batters.
Sounds like he doesn't want it. He doesn't want any part of that.
Well, I don't doubt him. He's been a starting pitcher his whole entire career.
Trade
but
him.
I would rather see Keuchel, obviously, because we just paid him. I'd rather see Giolito because he's our ace. I'd rather see Cease in that rotation. I'd rather see Ronaldo Lopez because he's younger than Carlos Rodon and doesn't have the injury issues. And I'd rather see Cease or Kopech, whoever it didn't say. I would rather see the four young guys in Giolito, Lopez, Cease, and Kopech in that rotation rather than Rodon.
That's Sean Anderson, other side of the glass. My name is Joe Ostrowski. We'll get to some Cubs talk in 15 minutes. Evan Altman from Cubs Insider will be joining me right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. You've got Joe Ostrowski. This segment on The Score brought to you by Kenosha Subaru. We'll continue the whites. You know what? No, let's go. I want to bring back. Oh, we won't have enough time for Ozzie, will we? Damn. We'll get to Ozzie Guillen later on because he had some great stuff on his true feelings about David Ortiz. But a lot of reports about death threats. Death threats with Mike Fiers and also some players on the Astros. You've got Joe Ostrowski on The Score.
You're listening to The Joe O Show on 670 The Score.
All right, I'm a little nervous to do this, but I heard we've got some more Houston Astros audio. Get to that in just a second. By the way, tomorrow morning, just like every Saturday on Sports Radio 670 The Score, I will be here 8:30 to 9 a.m. Early odds. It's basically a sports betting show. But tomorrow morning, Earl Buddy, Eli Hershkovich, will be joining me. We'll be talking some college hoops. We're a few weeks away from Selection Sunday, so start paying attention if you haven't been of late. All right, Julio Rosseo, what Houston Astros audio do we have? This is from today now? Okay, this is from today.
It's,
who are we going first?
Carlos Correa.
Oh, yeah, let's go with the voice of the team now. He was the first and only guy to give a sincere apology, or so we thought, and then he seemed to take it all back last weekend, and he hasn't shut up since. Let's listen to what he had to say today.
Everybody in here is getting death threats. It just feels like when you open your social media these days, that's the norm. You know, I mean, you don't see positive comments anymore. All you see is, you know, you come to New York, you better watch out. Your wife better watch out.
I mean, well, that's ridiculous. Not Correa's comments, just. And unfortunately, he is right. That is the norm, and there's no excuse for that. And yeah, it's going to happen, but I can't rip on him for that one.
Well, I think it's ridiculous, and the reason why I kind of told you that I thought it was kind of whiny is obviously the death.
Do you think he was asked about that because it is public knowledge now that Fiers is getting death threats and because of what Poppy Ortiz had to say yesterday?
I think yes. I think Reddick spoke first. So I think they probably grabbed Correa as well. I think they were probably, since they heard that, they were probably like, hey, what did you hear about? You know, are you receiving death threats at all? I think Reddick was the first to speak about getting death threats. So I think that's why we got Correa. But the one thing that I at least picked there was the fact that he was complaining that there's no positive comments anymore on social media. It's like, well, yeah, welcome to Twitter, but also like,
I think he was just making that. I don't think he was saying it because of this instance. He was just speaking in general. But maybe I'm wrong.
That's fair. But I think that now he's going on Twitter and he's seeing that all he's seeing is
cheater.
Like, I mean, the fact that you're seeing that is because you cheated.
Like, they're in their bubble. Like they legitimately have no idea why people are so upset. Like they understand why it's happening, but to this degree, it confuses them. With their fake apologies.
And that's why I think it's ridiculous that he's like, he wants to go on Twitter and see positive comments. Like, I don't want him seeing death threats.
Yeah, obviously. just wait for the games, buddy.
But it's a little whiny.
Just wait for the games. If you're waiting for some positive comments, good luck. You're going to keep on waiting. I don't think Astros fans are going to cheer them loudly. It's probably going to be an us against the world thing. It's going to have a lot of football. A lot of football there. Julio, anybody else speak today on this?
You want to hear from Josh Reddick himself?
Yeah, go ahead.
We get them every day, whether it's, you know, social media, private messages. Just, you know, I know a lot of guys are fearful to even put anything out on social media because every response is going to be, you know, obviously the cheater comments, and then you know, just people take it way too far with death threats to not only myself, my wife, my kids. You know, it's just it's way out of hand to where it's getting a little crazy. So it makes you really wonder what, like, going to some places where it could be very dangerous outside of the ballpark to even bring your family.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully nobody ever does anything, but I'm not going to excuse that type of behavior at all. Unfortunately, that is what people do. Yeah, they're going to be anonymous and they're going to do garbage like that. Like, in the end, it's sports. Like, it's supposed to be just entertainment. I wonder if it would be the same if they were actually sincere. Or was it later last week? It feels like their fake apologies were a month ago, because every day it's been something new with this story. Every single day. All right, let's get some Cubs conversation in next. And if you made the switch to Hulu and you're expecting to watch Cubs baseball tomorrow, maybe you won't be able to see Cubs baseball. That's what it sounds like. Evan Altman dug up some news on that, and we're just going to talk about the 2020 season in general and what Cubs fans should be expecting. Evan Altman, CubsInsider.com, will join me next. Joe Ostrowski with you. You've got the score.
You won't be booing about the marquee network in one year.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.